Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Chris Harrington joins us now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Sing My Way Home by the duo Delaney and Bonnie, which is sort of what Ja Morant was doing last night in his televised interview ahead of his return to the Memphis Grizzlies.
Does this predate Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, or Crosby, Stills, Nash?
It was around the same time. I think that's early 70s. I don't know the exact year. But yeah, Delaney Bonnie was a sort of blue-eyed soul duo. Actually did some stuff in Memphis, but all their stuff is late 60s, early 70s, so around the same time period.
I like that. Something good selection today, as per usual. All right, so you reference it. You've got a column up over at the Daily Memphian. Did you stay up? To the chagrin of my wife, I stayed up till 12:35 or whenever it aired to see the whole thing. How did you view it?
I mean, I had no choice because since Jeff was on the road, I ended up writing the column he probably would have written otherwise. When the news came out earlier in the day that he had met with Adam Silver and there was this return process, Jeff and I communicated about writing, and we both decided, there's really nothing to say right now. It'll still be a week before he comes back. We can take a pass, let the news hold. And then when the Jalen Rose interview happened, it was, well, we sort of have to do something, a column in addition to the news. And so decided that I was going to do it. And so I basically wrote off of the excerpts from NBA Countdown, and then it published before the full interview. So I had to stay up and watch it in case I needed to tweak the column I had already written and published, which I did slightly, but not greatly. And so unfortunately, yes, I was up until, almost 1 a.m. With that interview. I'm glad they held off the news as a news event. I'm glad they held it off to tease it and then use it for content later. Good stuff.
Yeah, it really was like this is like 2023. Like, all right, here's the first clip on SportsCenter. We'll show you two more clips on Countdown. But to see the full interview, you're going to have to wait till SVP, after the NBA doubleheader. I guess I'd start with this question. Did anything about that interview change your mind?
No, I mean, to the degree that we're sort of reviewing the theater of contrition, we've sort of been put into the place of having to do that, right? We sort of have no choice. I'd sort of describe that performance as dutiful. It was sort of, going through the hoops they think he has to go through, to get back. It's sort of, it feels like a pretty orchestrated process. But I would also say, I ultimately don't care that much about that. That it's not going to be about how well he performs contrition in an interview setting. It's ultimately going to be does the behavior change? And there's nothing he can say that will confirm that or that will – that will run counter to that. It's all going to be about how he reacts. And to me, this is not sort of what I wrote about. This is not the first time he's been put to the test. It's the second. To me, after that Pacers story, that story came out in the aftermath of the Pacers game, not only was there a story out, but then there was the revelation the NBA was investigating a gun allegation related to Ja Morant, and that happened in the wake of reports of all these other incidents from the past. Once that was all public, that was a public challenge to Ja Morant to change his behavior. And for him to go out, a few days later and do what he did in Denver was like a shocking, rejection of that test. And so now he's getting a do-over, and there's much more reason to believe that it is registered this time, right? Like, this was a real shock to the system in terms of his NBA career. And so my hope is that that shock to the system, like, you know, provokes a change in behavior and the way, you know, he does things, the way people around him do things, which I think is also important. Like, this starts with Ja, it does not end with Ja. But we're not going to know until, you know, the passage of time is what's going to determine this.
Yeah, I think the way that I viewed it was, if I'm grading this as a piece of persuasive material, which, I mean, in the end, that's, you know what I mean? Like, that is the goal. I personally
did what it's intended to be.
Right. I did not personally find it effective. I kind of thought you could, right. I thought if you were in one camp or the other, you could perhaps see what you wanted to see. And so in terms of being persuasive, I don't really feel like it persuaded people from one direction to the other. I also kind of netted out with, I don't really care. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it almost felt to me like this is something that a crisis management team would view, like, you've got to do. Like, we've got to talk. And so I just kind of netted out exactly where you did. In the end, the question that – it doesn't really matter what is said. The question is whether or not the behavior's changed, right?
Right.
And is that
– Yeah, no.
Is that like a fair – is that a fair standard, right?
I don't know what other standard you would have. I mean, I don't know what other standard there would ultimately be. That is the ultimate standard. You know, I guess at some level, speech is behavior, right? But not in this kind of stuff,
right?
In a bad way, speech can be behavior. In a good way, there's no speech good enough that it contradicts or papers over the behavior. So it'll be judged by the behavior. My hope is that this. And the other aspect of this is, you know, the therapeutic trappings and the degree, the time away, and you know, from what I've gathered, there are a lot of people out there who view that very earnestly. There are a lot of people out there who view that very cynically. I choose to, like, say I can't judge it. And so, you know, I think there's reason, if you take it seriously, and I think we should take it seriously, it does lead to a question of, okay, well, is this enough? If this was a serious need, has the need been filled? And I'm not saying it hasn't, but
sure.
to take it seriously is to beg the question of, well, okay, is this enough? Or is this being rushed back? But then if you take it cynically, maybe the shock to the system is mostly what's needed. Just the awakening of, oh, okay, this is serious. I can't do this anymore. And that may not take time. It may be that that's an instant recognition, right?
Sure. Yes.
And the rest has been a process of just managing, you know, more of the public relations aspect of it. I don't know what to make of all that. It's hard to sort it all out from a distance. And so the thing is that, I mean, I think based on what he did and what the NBA was able to ascertain investigatively, the 8-game suspension by the league seems appropriate to me, like not too harsh, not too soft. And so now, like, fine, like, let's get through it. Let's get back on the court and let's hope that this has been enough of a shock to the system that there will be a change going forward.
You had mentioned on Twitter yesterday, I believe, you know, minutes, if not seconds after the suspension was announced by the league, he could return on Monday, but it was to clarify he can return to the team. You do not expect him to play, and then Woj subsequently last night.
When that report hit, that was my first instinct and my first act was to try to figure it out. And I think it got reported like by Woj or whatever while I was in the midst of figuring it out. And so, like, but I had called somebody and said, okay, that doesn't mean he's playing that night, right? And then I was told he's not going to play that night. And so then I tweeted that out. And so, you know, that's the date to which he can return to team activities. And you know how they do, it's the ramping up and the whatever and the blah, blah, blah. And it should be like, I wouldn't want him to play that night, honestly. And so he'll rejoin the team that day. And then he'll go through whatever their processes are. And then my understanding is he will it will be soon. I don't know whether it'll be Wednesday, which is the next game after that. The game after that is Friday. I would, you know, if I were trying to guess when he's going to play, I would probably guess that Friday, but I don't know. Maybe it's Wednesday, but it won't be Monday.
So someone yesterday sent to me on Twitter, and now I've had my fact checker team go after it. Friday will be the Ja Morant gritty bobblehead. Does that have any impact one way or the other?
No, that's one of those sort of things. I mean, that's been on the schedule since, you know.
Correct. That is kind of coincidental.
Right. And so, no, I don't think that'll have any bearing on the decision making.
How do you, like, in the end, this team needs Ja Morant back, right? Like, does it have to be a lot more difficult than that? Like, I understand it's a lot to process, but, like, in the end, I just find myself thinking, like, he's their best player. They need him back.
They have basically played 500 basketball, you know, without him. I don't know, of course, since he's had to go back and look because he missed games early in the season, too. But I feel like they've generally played around 500 basketball without him this season. You know, people can fact check that for me.
I think it's give or take. I think you're 100% right. Yeah.
And so, like, you know, in this NBA, in this Western Conference, like, 500 basketball is a playoff team. But it's not a team that it's not the kind of team that has aspirations beyond squeaking in, right? And so without Ja Morant, like, they're a competitive team, and not last night in Miami, but, you know, game by game, whatever, they're a competitive team. But their aspirations are beyond being a competitive team. And to seek aspirations beyond, like, you know, happy to be here, then, yeah, they need Ja Morant.
Knowing that Ja Morant's going to be back during the regular season, and like you said, sooner rather than later, does that give you conviction one way or the other about how you think the Grizzlies will finish in the standings?
Oh, I think even before his return, I mean, I think we had sort of decided, like, they're going to finish second or third just because the gap at this point with Durant out. I don't see them moving down to four or up to one. I just think the gaps are, even though Denver's been struggling, I think the gaps are pretty solid there. And they're coin flippy with Sacramento. And so I don't know. I mean, I think it's coin flippy. You know, they'll be second or third, and then we'll see what the first round matchup is.
Do you have an explanation for why the Warriors are so bad at home? Because I'd mentioned this to Dan.
I'm sorry, on the road.
Beg your pardon. They're great at home, bad on the road. I know why the Grizzlies have been bad on the road. Like, but I don't. Right. It doesn't quite register to me with the Warriors.
I don't know the answer to that. I wonder, just with that team in general, if there's a level of arrogance based on what they've already accomplished, where they just, in the regular season, like, they're just not, you know, at home, you know, they get flowing and the crowd and whatever, and it's easier for everybody at home.
Sure.
But with them, it feels like they just don't put in the extra effort on the road because they don't think they need to ultimately because they're just waiting for the playoffs. And maybe that's part of it.
And I guess that's kind of what's
your theory?
Yeah, that is more or less my theory, is that I just think they have so many role players that they count on that those guys shoot better at home.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, like, overly simplified. But I do also buy into the idea of, all right, you know, they're on the road. Like, I think also it kind of speaks to what we've seen the nature of the regular season become, which is
right.
It feels like the regular season, the games matter to a certain degree. Like, you got to get into the playoffs. But it just feels like this season more than ever, particularly in the West, everyone is just focused on we have to just be healthy come playoff time because we don't feel like there's any – I don't really feel like there's a matchup that the Warriors fear. And maybe there's also, like, I guess maybe you could say, well, if they think Durant's coming back for Phoenix, maybe they'd like to avoid Phoenix early. But you know what I mean? Like, I just don't, I think that they just kind of view this as just kind of, we just got to get through this and then come playoff time, we'll ramp up.
No, I think that's how they feel, and it worked for them last season. And my hope is that, like, they get their comeuppance on that regard this season. But we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you're the Warriors and you're sitting and looking at it right now, okay, well, because I agree with you. I think what we know, these things are certain. I think Denver's getting the one. Does anyone have any pushback on that? So
no.
I mean, right? Like, that gap is wide enough. It's either going to be the Kings or the Grizzlies finishing two, and the other's going to finish three. It seems like Phoenix or the Clippers, I guess, are going to, like, feels like they're flopping. But if you're the Warriors, there's a case to be made. I want to be in, if you can put the Clippers, Phoenix, Denver on the top side of the bracket, and then you can put me with the Kings and the Grizzlies and whoever the play-in winner is, I can see a case where that's advantageous for the Warriors, and that's what they would prefer.
Oh, no, I agree. And that's why I think I think if you can't be a top four, like the sixth seed is very attractive. The seven would be, too. The problem there is that if you get to the seven, you have to go through a play-in,
right,
and you're in danger there. So I think, you know, if you're a team that can't, and at this point, you can't get to one. And so I think the sixth seed is particularly attractive for one of these better teams for the reasons you just said. If you're the Clippers or you're the Warriors in particular, those two teams that are like, we're just going through the motions and we're waiting for the playoffs. That if you're not going to get higher, you're not going to get to two or three, you know, I think six is a place you want to be. My hope is that one of those teams, you know, basically seeks that out and is happy with it and then gets smacked in the first round. That would be my hope.
I would, like, I understand, okay, 82, like, we can talk about all the things about the regular season, the problems with it. We can harp on that. I just, as a sports viewer, would enjoy seeing, if a team didn't take the road seriously all year, and I'm not really even pointing the finger at the Grizzlies, I'm more pointing the finger at the Warriors, I would like to see that have some impact. You know what I mean? Like, where they don't have home court advantage, and that costs them.
No, I mean, I've sort of felt this way about the Clippers last season. They ended up, you know, not really getting together. But to me, the Clippers is a team that sort of hasn't taken the regular season seriously. And I want there to be a penalty for that. I want teams that don't take the regular season seriously to, like, to not thrive in the playoffs, right? I don't like what it would say about the game. And I don't like sort of, you know, to me, you're really like rallying against the basketball gods when you sort of slough off the 82 game season and say, well, we'll get right in the playoffs. I do not want that to work for teams that do that stuff.
Okay, let's get to last night. Is there anything to glean from it? Because Mark and I were talking.
You tell me, man. I didn't even watch it. Because I was writing that my jaw column. So I turned the TV off so I could write, and so I did not see that game.
All right,
that may be the only game this season I didn't see.
Here were my quick takeaways. I talked about it with Mark yesterday. This felt like a schedule loss. Even I don't know if it fits into the definition of a schedule loss, but you've got a three-game road trip. You're playing Dallas shorthanded on Monday night. Like,
then you go to Miami and then back to San Antonio. That's
right.
A weird scheduling.
That also just feels like, you know, the unspoken bond is let's get the first and the third. If we get the middle one, great. But, like, let's focus on beating, like, to me, one of the paths for the Grizzlies to the two seed is beat the teams you're supposed to beat because you got more of them on your schedule than the Kings do. And this, the game started a little different than I expected. It was that sleepy Miami atmosphere, you know what I'm talking about, where Miami kind of slows the game down. The arena was, like, half full. And the game just had, like, no juice. And the Grizzlies came out early hitting some shots. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe this game's going to go a little different than I expected. Miami closes the first quarter extremely well, takes the lead. The second quarter kind of, like, hovered in this four-point range, kind of where the Grizzlies were still in striking distance, yet you were losing confidence as the minutes went by. And then the Heat pulled away at the end of the third. And then at the end of the first half, and then by the end of the third quarter, it was just kind of over. Yet,
right,
the only thing that I kind of took away from it, Roddy's numbers didn't end up great, but man, he did kind of like give you instant offense. He hits a big shot, whatnot. I'm just now at the point with him that the more I see of him, I just think he gives them more in kind of that. He didn't even check in until the second quarter, so Kennard came in first. But I just think he gives you more than kind of who else he's in the pecking order with. You know, Conchar, Kennard. I just think that there's more with Roddy.
So I guess my box score reaction to that game sort of matches with your general feel for it, having actually watched it. which is that, is it surprising to lose at Miami? Of course not. Is it surprising to lose big in Miami? Nope. Is it surprising to give up 138 points to Miami? Yeah, it kind of is. And it's not because the Grizzlies have been good defensively, even with Steven Adams out. Like, you know, the offense has been a problem. Even with John Morant out, because John Morant, I think he's been better defensively this season, but that doesn't really hurt your defense, John Morant being out. So the Grizzlies have maintained an elite defense even through all this stuff. And so that's what was out of character about the game, not losing, not even losing big, but giving up 138 to the Heat, which is not like the most high-octane offense in the league. And to me, that suggests like an anomalous game, right? That suggests that this was one that not all that indicative of stuff, and that maybe, you know, the idea of a scheduled loss, just sort of one of those nights. You know, the fact that you give up that point total to that team when you've been a good defense, that to me does reek of, you know, wash that one away and move on kind of thing.
The old throw it in the trash game. You know, like, yeah. Let's not even bother ourselves with the film on this one. They also got frustrated early. There was a play where Tyus goes to the rack. There's some contact, no call. Jenkins gets a tech. It's like in the first quarter, Dez kind of got frustrated because there was a lot of contact. I don't know. Like, that's, to me, it was just kind of the game went to Miami's liking. You know what I mean? More so, like, they were able to kind of get handsy and they could be physical. And then, you know, the Grizzlies weren't particularly effective shooting the basketball. And to me, like, okay, that was kind of end of story. Moving on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'd say, you know, get a win Friday against San Antonio. The Golden State game, I'm going to miss that one because I'm actually going to Columbus for the tournament. I'm leaving in the morning. But the Golden State back home again will be quite interesting rematch after what happened last time. Without Ja, who knows what'll happen in that game. And then, like, you know, get Ja back, probably at least one of those Houston games, I would guess, although we don't know. And then you'll have, at that point, you'll have about 10 games. It may be that the last couple, if seeding is locked in, you're sitting guys. It tends to be what happens. So let's say you get eight. You get really like a 7-8 game stretch after you get Ja back, before you start shutting down, and like put your team on the floor to the degree you can because you won't have Steven Adams or Brandon Clark, and sort of try to pick up a rhythm with it and then go into the playoffs. That seems like where we're at.
All right, are you calling the Hogs at 3:30?
I'm going to try, man. I got a lot of stuff I got to do to get out of town, but I'm hoping to carve out some time this afternoon for some Woo Pig Suey action. Yes, I not only my basketball fandom and my brackets both depend certainly on Arkansas this afternoon.
The good news is, well, I guess it's like kind of good news, but bad news, it's good news if your bracket advances Arkansas, is that Bill Self is still not going to be on the bench for Kansas. So, and there's always that, but it's obviously not good news from a health perspective.
I'll tell you, I didn't have the gumption to go Arkansas all the way to the Final Four. But I did have the gumption to put them in the Elite Eight for the third year in a row. So go Hawks.
That's very, very generous of you. Chris, we appreciate it, buddy.
All right, thanks.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. host a local event, and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.